Hello, everybody. This is Dave Shaw here welcoming you onto the call. Hello, everyone who's here live and everyone listening in on the recording. We had about 29 registrants for the call, and right now there's five of us on the line. We've got Haku, Katrine, and Josh, and I know Ariana was just here. And Sal and myself, again, my name is Dave Shaw, and I'll be your conductor and Sal the host. And it's just such a pleasure to be here with you all today. Sal, you got some opening words as well?
Yeah, just welcome. Thanks for everybody that is here on the call, and thanks for everybody that's going to pick up the recording after the call. A lot of people, you know, just due to the time and the day of the week, aren't here, even though they will be listening later, and I send out greetings to all of those folks. So I look forward to speaking on the subject, and definitely if there's any feedback along the way, either during the call or after the call, then I'm more than willing to take that. Thank you.
Yeah, and just a little bit about the technology here that we're using. Folks are muted right now, and if you want to raise your hand to speak or to signal us, you can press the 1 button, and then I'll take you off mute. And we'll be having lots of interactivity and dialogue and question and answer throughout this time, so it's going to be a really interactive process. But press the 1 if you want to raise your hand, and that'll signal me that you're trying to get our attention. So, Sal, you want to ease into this?
Yeah, yes. So, you know, typically on these calls and the way we conduct both the calls and kind of our gathering is that we like to bring our minds together. And we do this through Thanksgiving, basically giving thanks and then also remembering all the good things in our lives and all the things that have supported us in our journey. So what I use personally for the Thanksgiving address is this prayer. It's actually a prayer in Lakota. It's what they call the Chinupa prayer, so it's the prayer of the sacred pipe. But in this, it's very similar to probably other Thanksgiving addresses that you've heard before, that comparatively to like the Mohawk Thanksgiving address that Jake Swamp brought from his people to the H Shield, remembering all the good things in life and all the elements and forces around us that actually support us in our journey here. So I'm going to go ahead and say that first in English, and then I'm actually going to say it in Lakota, too. And then that way you have an understanding, and we're going to bring our minds together in that way. So I'll start first with the English version. And just to let you know, too, that this translation that I did is the first page of the book, Man Among the Helpers, as well. So, as it starts, Father, great mystery, as I stand here, I send my voice to you. I call out to you, even though I'm so far below you, my voice may not reach you. I remember this creation you have made and say these words in thanksgiving. I first remember all the beings of this world that you have made to live in the clouds, all the winged beings from the skin of the sky to where the heavens meet the earth. I remember all the beings that live and move upon the earth, and all the beings that live and move within the earth, and all the beings that live and move in the waters, all the way to the very bottom of the waters. These beings of the sky, earth, water, you have made for us to know you and to learn, and through your creation to communicate to you. Here now, as I stand, I remember these give thanks to all the many types of trees and all the many types of fruit trees and all the many types of shrubs and the bushes and the herbs, and all the many types of roots, and all the many types of grasses in this world. I remember these beings who provide for all our needs in this life, those who protect us, heal us, clothe us, feed us, warm us, in all the many ways not mentioned. We natural humans and creatures live in this world you have made, and it is good. I remember this as I stand here. The sun, the moon, the thunder beings, and the stone, as I stand here, I remember those that are forever sacred.
A day wakantanka, a wankabia iehan ichia a pink stationi. The ka makpia yoko kile, itimahel wa makashkan kea hubahu, posa biktacha wichaya kage. Oyama kakyanka namakakyo klate. Mini namini chete kta iaglea. Wamakashkan kea oyam bikta chawichaya kage. Lene chewi chunkia bikta chawichaya kage. Oyama kakyanka chan oedona kecha. Na chanwas guya oedona kecha. Na wapde oedona kecha. Na wahutkan oedona kecha. Na peji oedona kecha ya kage. Lene kchewi chashana o makashkan kea makawi kanwaji iakan koyam pikun. Lene unkiwa shte pikta chawi chaya kage. Otun kashala lene ki kiksu yo ahinaji. Poampe tui na ha hepiwi na wakuba koza na ina. Lene o yasi wa kanku I cha kiksu yo ahinaji. Umitaku yo yasi.
So that's our way, my way of bringing our minds together, remembering that this world is here to support us and that has given us life and our ancestors and those that are yet to come, that this is why we're here to do the work that we need in this day and age. So part of this work is exactly this right here, this call, and what we're speaking about today is this book. This is my work, so I want to, for those that don't know me or haven't read the book, I want to explain a little bit more about who I am and why I actually wrote this book. You know, for everybody, you all know my name as Sal Giancarelli, you know, a very very Italian name. My mother is actually Irish, French, and a bunch of, you know, kind of European ancestries. There's a little bit of Native American in there as well. And my father is Italian. So I ended up with my grandfather's name. His name, Salvatore Giancarelli, he was the first. I'm actually a second, and I have a son who's the third. But so that's kind of, you know, where I come from, and that's my lineage as far as my background. What I could say is that what happened with me and the way that my parents raised me was in a very deep connection to nature. And they provided certain experiences in my life, not really knowing why, but just understanding kind of instinctively that this is something that my siblings and I needed. And what that basically led to was a state of deep nature connection, something that, you know, we talk about a lot around the eight shields and definitely a big part of the Village Talk, you know, calls with John Young and the group there. And the reason why, one of the reasons why this is so important is that people that have this deep nature connection, you know, get into this state of mind where they see everything in relationship. And so as I was growing up, this was a big part of my life, understanding that there's a very deep spiritual and physical, emotional and mental connection that I have to the earth and to the people around me. And just through that experience, beginning to recognize this process of connectivity, what we call, you know, it's like a form of intimacy. We're not necessarily born with that understanding or those forms, so this is something that we have to be raised with, and this is something that we have to recognize and put into our lives. If we were technically living in like a completely natural state in relationship with the earth, then that intimacy would start as soon as we're born, and the society that we were born into would have all those processes. I was fortunate enough to probably just get enough of that intimacy of connection to nature to allow something to occur in my life. So what ended up happening is at 15 years old, I had basically a visionary experience that I actually call it like the great vision, because this is really what got the wheels turning for me. What I wrote about in the book is that it was kind of like an average everyday experience. You know, I worked in one town and I was bike riding between the town I lived in and the town I worked. And I ended up riding my bike home at night. At the time, my mother was actually awake when I arrived home pretty late at night, like 10 o'clock at night, and she was watching this program about Native American ceremonies. And it's kind of interesting, you know, because it wasn't like this vision quest or anything like that, but what ended up happening was I just laid down on the floor and watched this program, this TV program with my mother, And do what I was seeing on the TV, I started to really identify with what the processes they were talking about, like the vision quest, like these healing ceremonies, like these ways, these connective ways to maintain balance within a person and balance within communities in relationship directly to the earth and the communities and that individual. And at that moment, it was like all of these neural connections in my brain kind of reattached or reformed, or they just got really strong. But there was a very distinct sensation that went along with that. And what I saw suddenly was how the earth is really in this interdependent relationship, you know, what we would call it, like this ecology relationship now. Not understanding that exactly at 15, but just seeing these like ropes, these lines all over the earth, and how each and every being and each and every part of the earth is connected in multiple ways like this. So I guess you could call it the web of life. Now, as this vision continued, I saw this as it kind of started, you know, more in a natural state, and the visionary experience progressed till the point where it kind of showed like the modern experience and what people were doing both with themselves and with the earth. And what I saw is that this web of life, these connections or these ropes that tie everything together, they were really tattered. And there was a lot of them that were broken. There was far less at that moment in time than what I saw, you know, as the earth was in a healthy, balanced state. And in my being, there was a calling that said, this is a problem. This isn't just a problem for your generation, but this is a problem that your children and your grandchildren are going to inherit, and that this is what needs to be corrected at this stage of life, at this stage, in this point in time. So from that experience, I started to basically really separate myself from people and my community, my family. And I would go out into the woods constantly. I had to understand what this actually meant to me and what I needed to do with that. So through this process, I would basically go out into the woods and go out to this mountain that we live nearby, a very sacred mountain. It's actually one of the only mountains in the country that runs in a east-west direction versus a north-south. And I'd go up there and I'd sit at this mountain, and without really understanding what I was doing, I would take tobacco and I would make prayers with that tobacco and actually encircle myself with it and just sit there and pray and ask for guidance and just kind of build on those connections and on those ropes that I saw within that vision. Well, over time, actually a relatively short period of time, a few months, it got to the point where it was like I needed guidance, like a human guide, a human mentor. I didn't know who and I didn't know what, but I just began to say, I need somebody to show me what to do with it. And at that time, I was actually working with a person that was very skilled in herbal medicine. And we began to work on what we ended up calling a medicine wheel garden. And the idea there was that this teacher of the herbal medicine, he was very much into kind of European traditions, like Druid and things of that nature, where my focus was definitely more into the Native American side, being that, you know, my reference point being I was born in America. This is the only place I've known, so I want to know what the medicine and the understanding is here. And through this whole process, within a couple of months, a medicine family by the name of Chips basically showed up at the doorstep saying we would like to do ceremony, and we're looking for a place to do that. And we ended up working together. So this family is a very interesting and unique family within Native American medicine. A little background on them. Chips is a translation of the original medicine person of this family. His name was Wolptuka. Wolptuka, it can be translated into chips or particles or pieces. What it actually means is the process of going from one solid substance, like one whole, and then breaking into the individual parts. So it's not so much the objects, but it's actually the process of how one becomes many. So that was the original medicine person, and he was born back in the 1800s. He had a number of children, and these children became very, very powerful medicine people. They actually lived and grew during the times of the first reservation period, and they ended up living on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. So they lived through a very extremely difficult time, obviously, on a political level, on a social level, but also one of the things that was happening is that the medicine and the medicine people were being persecuted to the extent that they would actually lock them in prison. Some of them were being sent off to psychiatric hospitals in various parts of the state and the country to be pretty much used as guinea pigs for different operations and whatnot. The Chips family and the descendants of Wotika were able to avoid that, and they ended up living in pretty much isolation in one particular part of the reservation. And due to also because they were such powerful medicine people, they had pretty much the protection of their own people, and eventually they actually got protection of the U.S. government as well. They were provided documentation that allowed them to perform ceremonies when all other people weren't allowed to do that. So they were considered these native healers at such a high level that they got their licenses, you know, their medical licenses. And so through that, a bunch of young people were trained at that time. And one of the people that were actually trained, a lot of people on this call are familiar with that person. He's actually a nephew and a grandson to not Chips, but his children. And this person's name is Gilbert Walking Bull. Gilbert Walking Bull was a student of these two main people that carried the medicine in the Chips lineage. Their names are Horn Chips and Moose Camp. And so from them, from the Chips side, came a number of medicine people. The grandson of Horn Chips is a gentleman by the name of Godfrey Chips. And he was the one that showed up at Massachusetts looking to do ceremony. And he's the one that became my mentor, my teacher, and he also eventually became my father-in-law. I married into the family at 18, and I was in a relationship with his daughter, Julie, for 15 years. So that was pretty much my training. It was through this medicine family. What they do, what the Chips medicine is, and what the ceremonies that they perform is called Uwipi. And Uwipi is you could translate that very simply as being tied or bound up. There's many other ways to translate that, but that's the most simple reference or way to translate it into English. But what it means is that within the Uwipi ceremony, the medicine person, which was Godfrey at the time, is covered in a blanket and tied up in a particular way and then laid down within the ceremony. So these are very, very high-level ceremonies. These are very intense ceremonies, and these ceremonies were, for the most part, for people that really had no other options to actually get healed or to find a way to live in this world. The people that would come into these ceremonies oftentimes were, you know, they had used all their options up, you know, as far as modern medicine. The doctors would often, you know, say you only have months to live. And so they would have no other option but to start looking for some other type of alternative medicine. And so they would find Godfrey, they would find this medicine lineage, and then they would approach him saying they want to live, and what does it take to live? So what my job became is basically to teach these people that were coming in what the ceremonies took and what this medicine's about and what they needed to do in their personal lives to bring about this healing state. So I became this translator between the medicine that I was learning from Godfrey in the Chips family, and then translating it to, in particular, non-Native participants, so non-Lakotas that didn't really have a reference for this understanding, but they came in with this great need for healing. And this was a, you know, extremely challenging, I guess, job, passion, calling, whatever you'd like to call it. But it was very challenging to get somebody that has grown up in the modern society to the extent and lived a life to the extent that they have a disease process happening within their physical beings as well as their spiritual beings, their mental or emotional beings, that is pretty much going to take their life away and take them, you know, them out of this physical being within a very, very short period of time. And to take somebody that's been like on that path for literally years to get to that sixth state and then move them consciously off of that path and put them on a new healthy path is, you know, extremely challenging in any setting, you know, whether that be of modern medicine or indigenous natural healing. So it, you know, I basically over time learned how to do this very, very efficiently. And I worked with the Chips family for over over 17 years, working with the medicine in this way, as far as translating the ceremonies into a modern context, and then along with other duties as well. Of course, you know, I set up the altar, I sang the songs. I was basically like the hands of the medicine person. I did all the work, and then I got it all ready so that when Godfrey would come into the ceremony room, all he'd have to do is get tied up, do his part, and then, you know, basically that was it, and everything else was taken care of. So that's, you know, a little bit more on my background and where I came from. Now, the biggest question that I think that comes from this, both for myself and I hope for others, is that, you know, why? Why did all of this take place? And over the years, I've really come to understand it in a much better way, tying it all back into that original vision and what that was about. You know, in the original vision, it was all about these ropes, all about this web of life that's getting tattered. And understanding that each person that comes into ceremony, each individual person has that connection as well. And especially when people are sick, their ropes are extremely tattered, right? Their connection is weak, not only within themselves, but to any external forces or external energies. So what this is all ultimately about is reestablishing those ropes and reestablishing those connections. And there's a number of ways to do that beyond ceremony, but what ceremony actually does is facilitate that process. And it actually enhances that process and it expedites that process so that, like the extreme example of a person that's dying and only is given months to live because cancer is throughout their whole body, can within a 4-day period or less be cancer free and walk out of that ceremony room, the ceremony itself, and live in a connective state for the rest of their lives, in a healthy state for the rest of their lives. So how that relates back to actually culture is that the same thing is occurring within cultures and within societies. That tattering of the web of life isn't just within that individual. That tattered state of connectivity is within the group consciousness as well. And it's within our culture now. It's such a high degree that this is actually the original reason why Godfrey and the Chips family took the medicine off the reservation, kind of took it out of hiding and brought it to some modern cultures in, let's say, the Western society, because it was recognized at that point that the world had gotten into such a bad state as far as this connection, these sacred connections, that it was not only going to be a detriment to, let's say, mainstream society or modern society, but it was going to be a worldwide detriment, which, you know, I think we're all pretty aware of that point right now. You know, anytime you turn on the news, you know, another mass death of, you know, animal species or a group of animals has occurred. You know, there's war all across the world with people. And, you know, the economy is really in a bad shape. You know, it's maintaining itself right now, but there's all of these different components within our societies that are starting to collapse, and not only within our societies, but within nature. So we're now at this point where we're facing a decision, probably the the biggest decision that humanity has ever faced, or at least one, the biggest one in a very long time, as far as what are we going to do about this? And that's really a question that I think we all are asking ourselves individually, and we all are asking ourselves collectively. And at this time, I think what we're going to do is take a little pause here, and I'm going to call on Dave, and we're going to speak on that a little bit. Maybe have a little breakout session where you guys, the group here, can actually talk about this question is, one, are you aware of the current state of the world? Looking at the call list here, I believe everybody is, definitely. But what are you called to do? What are you as individual beings on this world that are in that connective state? Where's your passion lie to make the adjustments in this world? And maybe how are you going to do that? Are you doing it right now? And if you are, how's it going for you? So, Dave, I guess I'll let you coordinate this next part.
Great. Feels so good to be here with you all. And I'm going to make groups of two at random, and I'll make a bell when it starts, and I'll give a one-minute bell when there's a minute left, and we'll go for about 10 minutes.